100 Watt Wonder.
From the Arts Center in downtown Carrboro, this is Claudio Speakeasy and Radio Theater, a program that has fascinating guests, lively talk and conversation, community news, storytelling, and a look at our local entertainment scene. Good radio and always a few surprises. Now here's Claudio.
Good morning, everyone, and thank you for tuning in from wherever in the world that may be, those that will eventually tune in on podcast and those that are checking us out right here locally. Thank you for listening to Claudio Speakeasy and Radio Theatre. I have with me today the artist extraordinaire, as well as storyteller, Jonathan Daniel, direct from Zimbabwe, Africa. Africa is the continent I myself was raised on, so it's going to be a good conversation. Good morning. Get thee to the microphone. Just go ahead and pull it. There we go.
Good morning. How are you?
Very pleased to have you on. I also have the historian Bob Crowley, who is also the president of the Apex Arts Council, on here with me. He is actually introducing us, presenting Jonathan Daniel.
Absolutely. And good morning to you, Claudio, good and everybody morning out there. And I saw Jonathan at a show not too long ago, and I just said, man, we've got to get him on here. So I'm going to turn it back to you.
Absolutely. Give that mic back to Jonathan, because I'm going to start the morning pretty much the way we started it when we jumped in the same car this morning. I met him for the first time, but Bob had already elaborated on who he was. And I remember telling him that I had to learn to be a pretty good street fighter in South Africa, where I grew up, on the outskirts of Johannesburg, a place called Edenvale. And the first thing he came back with, it was like being understood after many a year of trying to explain this to people over here. The first thing he responded with was that you had to learn to be a good street fighter, or you didn't survive Africa.
That's right. That's right.
It was so good to have that understood without explaining it, because I think on average, to explain that to anyone that does not know the Africa of that day, it makes it impossible to hear unless they've seen something in a movie. They can't really relate.
That is so true. That is so true.
It was a situation, and I'm sure you grew up similarly, to where I just got so tired of getting beaten up every time I went to school or came back from school from bullies and such. Afrikaners in particular,
yes.
Ruinecker, that I learned how to box, and I finally realized that with a certain technique, you can win these fights.
There you go.
And I started to look for them, yeah, just to sharpen my edges.
Yeah. For me, it actually was very interesting when I was a kid. My dad didn't allow us to fight. My father was like, if you fight, you're going to get it.
Oh, it wasn't allowed at home for me either.
Yeah, but then what happened was something very extraordinary happened. I was walking with my little brother, and a little bully came and challenged me. And he pretty much just knocked me to the ground. And everybody just looked at me and like, what are you going to do? And then he got up. I actually got up, and he said, and then he drew a line in the dirt. And he said, if you cross this line, I'm going to really damage you. And I was like, okay. And I just stood there, and there was this little girl that I liked, and she liked me, and she looked at me and she goes, how are you going to defend me if you can't even stand for yourself?
Oh my goodness.
Yes. And so he came right in my face, and he started spitting at me, and at that time my face was just changing and I was shaking, and with no warning I butt-headed him so hard on his forehead. And it was a technique I used to use using a tennis ball. We used to play this game where you stand with two goals, goalpost, and mm-hmm. you throw the ball in the air and you butt-headed it with your head.
Badminton by forehead.
That by forehead.
So or soccer, we used it in soccer.
Exactly. So I butt-headed this guy on the forehead, and he fell down and he passed out completely.
I believe it.
Went out cold. And when everybody looked at him, they thought he was dead, and I thought he was dead. I was scared because I'd never fought with anybody. And before you knew it, we turned him upside right up, and he had a big swollen head, mm-hmm. like a tennis ball on his head.
I believe it.
And when he got up, he looked at me and he said, I've never been hit like this. You are now on my team. And from that day on, everybody used to call me Head Boy.
Now that's sportsmanship. That speaks so well of him.
That's right. That's right.
That's an Head Boy. I can see that.
Head Boy. That's
slipping over to that whole idea. I became a bit of a legend, and I'm not trying to toot my own horn here. This is truth. In a town called Edenvale, because I got very good with a slingshot, and there were always what they called catty fights.
Mm-hmm.
That you basically cut yourself a forked a tree branch, put a good piece of elastic on it, and use that to defend yourself. And the beauty of that weapon is everyone had one in the back pocket, is that your ammunition was everywhere. You just picked up a stone off the ground and you used it to fight back if somebody was attacking you. Mm-hmm. And over the course of one particular summer, I badly cut my right foot. And I think the word got around that Claudio's injured, so maybe he's not as crack as he used to be. And I remember being in my backyard one day, and I saw this sort of sense, this vision in my periphery, somebody climbing the back wall. We had a brick wall in the backyard. And I didn't make anything of it because I was preoccupied with eating a fig. And you know how delicious figs are in Africa.
Yeah.
God. And all of a sudden, I saw that alarmed me was somebody stretching the slingshot.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew at that point that, oh, God, I've been had because I had no time to respond. He was already stretching, which means he already had his aim.
Yeah.
And this guy blew the stitches out of my foot. And all I could do at the time, my eyes turned into a waterfall from pain. All I could do at the time just to get rid of him was to turn around, dig into the ground, into the earth, hoping I would find a rock because I couldn't see. I just had blurry vision. And I shot at this guy on my wall with a slingshot, not realizing that I took off 2/3 of his left eyebrow. And the word got around, don't mess with Claudio, he'll shoot you in the face, and my troubles ceased. Sad to say that that's how it had to be.
That's right, you became the street hero then.
Yes, yes. Don't mess with him, man, he'll hurt you bad. And
right.
I didn't even know I was going to hit the guy at all.
That's right.
But that's
slingshot. Talking of a slingshot, I have some at home with me.
I want one.
All right, I'll bring you one.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
I used to always have one. I've got a wrist rocket, which I guess is nothing close because it's made of metals here. But you can certainly use that to defend yourself.
Now, this one is made in Zimbabwe.
I definitely want to see that. I'm definitely interested in having one.
Definitely.
Anyway, just wanted to throw you folks into a little bit of the South African or African culture overall, since I have a countryman here. I'm actually German-Italian born, but I was raised in Africa, and to me, Africa is my heart. But it did take an instinct for survival to get you through it. You had an interesting point to make on the survival issue, where you said that the apartheid in a certain way, and we are in no wise blessing apartheid, was actually good for the African culture, especially the black African, because of how it put them on their defenses and in survival mode. Apparently they were quite dormant before all this happened, but as a result of a lengthy period of apartheid, these people rose up and became recognized.
Oh yeah, I think for me, for myself, I stand for myself. I feel it was a blessing in disguise.
Mm-hmm.
The things that we were made to do by force and labor and everything, we endured all those things. But now that I'm grown and traveled around the world, I'm realizing those things have become a tool for myself to protect myself, and I'm very well. I work very well with my own hands. I can do anything.
Absolutely.
I want to. Things that I used to be forced to do now comes natural because it's part of me. And I think so. It was a blessing. Not to justify that it was a
thing. There's no justification whatsoever. It was horrendous.
Exactly. But I think we need to take that as a stepping stone that made me stronger, made me the person I am today, than using it as something that was a lame excuse of, well, we were badly treated, but I think we should look at it as a tool.
And
it
so
sharpened you.
In so many ways, it points at the severity of something happening to the extent that a people have to rise up and stop being asleep at the wheel, just like eventually the American people are going to have to realize they're being consumed by their politicians and by a greed that is literally steamrolling over them before they actually stand up and rise against it to stop it.
That's so true.
Before they're made poorer than they are now. And that we as a collective here in this country really need to rise up against this simple tyranny that's being imposed upon us because we're not doing anything. It's almost like the American people, to a great extent, are treating our politicians and those that impose these injustices upon us like the drunk at home. Oh, he's really okay. He's
okay.
Really a good guy.
That's right. That's right. I tell you a little story. Once, when I bought my first house here in Holly Springs, North Carolina, and
good area, by the way.
Yeah, thank you very much. I'm very good with landscaping,
mm-hmm.
cutting the grass.
I can imagine you are. Yeah,
I cut it precisely, and my grass was always cut the neatest. Have you ever seen like the way they cut the golf courses? The golf courses, not only the golf courses, but the baseball courses.
Oh yes,
like,
of
there's
course.
Lines, yes, and everything. Yes, yes. And that's how I cut my grass.
Scientifically.
Exactly. And so people, when they walk through the my yard, they're like, "Did you hire a landscaper? Because your yard always looks good." I was like, "Oh yeah, it's me, myself." I'm like, "How did you learn this? Where did you learn this?" And I said, "I grew up as a garden boy in Africa."
Africa, yes.
And they're like, "Really? Wow." And I said, "But I take this situation that I grew up in as a tough situation, actually has taught me to be something that is so beautiful."
And just to shine some light on this, even though you look upon the days in Africa when you were a garden boy and when you cultivated this skill, mm-hmm. to you obviously honed it to perfection.
Yes.
The garden boys were honored for the skill they had. They were used naturally, yes. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were certainly used, mm-hmm. but at the same time they were extremely respected because that's how the white man showed off his property.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. That's so right. There is that aspect to it.
Oh yeah, that's for true. Yeah, but it all depends what you do. You know, what situation you're in and what you take it to be.
Yes.
Sometimes you can take it as poor mentality, me, and you wallow in your own sorrow, mm-hmm. and you never get up from that. But when you are taught to be tough, regardless of what you're doing, I think like in the situation we're talking about, like iron sharpens other iron, you know.
Absolutely.
I feel like when you want to make something useful, you as a piece of iron, it doesn't just look a car, let's for example,
mm-hmm.
it first of all, it never just came just from nowhere and become a car. It went through a process. That process was that they had to melt that metal first.
Yes.
And imagining that fiery furnace burning. And then they put it on an anvil. And on that anvil, on top of the anvil, they take a sledgehammer and they pound on this iron. And then they put it back in fire again. And then put it back on the anvil. And you wonder, why am I going through all this pain? And then the master said, so that you could be useful in my shop.
The tempering of the steel.
Exactly. And at the end of the day, everybody's looking at you like, wow. You look at this thing. It's amazing. It's good. Mm-hmm. But what it all is you went through all this process, the redefining process. And I feel for myself, I grew up as a slave in Zimbabwe, but that was a redefining moment for me. So now I take this wherever I go here in America.
You took strength from it.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
And I don't look at the negative. I look at the positive. I use it now as my stepping stone to the next level. And I tell kids, I say, look, regardless of what I went through, if I were to have to do it again, I would go through that again because it has made me the better person I am. I understand what life is. I understand what to help other people is. I understand what to sleep without eating any food. I was the kid who grew up without eating food for 5 days. I was the kid who wore his first clothes at 11 years old. So I understand all of that. So today I appreciate life as it is as a whole. I don't use it as a lame excuse like, oh, you don't understand what they did to me, so I'm what I am because of what they did to me.
And there are so many doing that.
Sadly. No, I am what I am today because of what I went through. So I take it with great joy and because I have to live this life for myself.
And it really does help you. It does cultivate an aspect of joy in you because you don't have this. You don't have the element of taking things for granted as part of your psyche.
Yes, and I learned to forgive as well. That's the big
you have
key
to.
Element to that.
Doesn't mean you have to forget.
Don't forget because it's a pain. It's right. always there for you. But what I've come to realize is, anger and bitterness is the poison you drink, hoping someone else would die.
Bravo. I totally agree. I couldn't agree more because it does poison. It does poison the author.
Exactly. And so for people to say, if you were born in such darkness and in such bad situation, how could you forgive and move on? And I say, because that becomes my strength. When I forgive, I take it this way. When someone has done something wrong to me, it's almost like they're throwing stuff at me and I'm grabbing all those things and hanging on to those things. Every time I see them, it reminds me of that and my heart just tends and I'm just so crunching with anger and bitterness. So if I have 10 people doing this, they're throwing all these things to me. Well, guess what? At the end of the day, I'm overloaded and I cannot move.
Right.
I'm slow. But the day I learned to forgive, forgiveness is like as if you insulted me And then I say, I forgive you. I'm actually giving you back that insult.
And
now
in
it's in your hands.
Yes.
And then I go into the other person and do the same thing. And before you know it, I'm light. I don't have any more weight on me. So then I'm free at last. And that's what I learned. I have to forgive so that I can be able to move freely.
While the other guy's going, hey, I didn't want these things back. What do I do with them?
It's your stuff.
Right.
Do something with it. Mm-hmm. And then you find out those people also have to learn to forgive themselves. If they don't, they're the one who are overweighted. Because today, you, brother, I'm a black man and you're a white man. You know,
yes.
When I see you, I don't have anything with you at all.
I don't personally think in color at all.
Exactly. I don't do that as well. But there are some people who are still living in the past today.
Oh, yeah.
And that's what's eating them. And they can never move from where they are to get to a different level.
They're spending too much time trying to justify their misbegotten roots, so
yes.
to speak.
And you know what I found out too? The prejudice, the second prejudice is the worse than the first one. And let me explain that to you.
How so?
Okay. The first prejudice I received in Zimbabwe as a black man, I was mistreated.
Mm-hmm. It was even by your own.
Exactly. But it was out of ignorance.
Yes.
The second prejudice is when I retaliate with vengeance because I want to hurt you more than you hurt me.
And yet you are deliberate.
And so you see, mine is now worse than yours. Mm-hmm. So I have to think what I'm doing is actually worse than the first
That's
one.
That's a very good point.
So I don't do it because I know I don't want to be worse than what you were. Or the person that mistreated me. Mm-hmm. So I learned to forgive and move on.
And even, you know, to go back to something as simple as the way we started this conversation, being a street fighter, mm-hmm. even to fight in the street, you had to have a mind that gave you a kind of logic that went away from anger, because anger would be the main reason you would be conquered. If you go into a fight because you've lost your temper, you're giving the other person ammunition to take you down because you're already half down.
Exactly. Because you won't even know how to barricade yourself
right.
and to hide, because you just like feel the anger, you walk through.
And you're flailing, you're missing, whatever.
Whereas you're not focused.
Mm-hmm.
If you were not angry and not bitter, you can focus and say, this white man here, I'm going to eat with him. We're going to share a meal together, regardless of what we went through before.
Absolutely. And on that note, we're going to go to a little music from Rocco here, and then I'm going to come back and bring on Bob Crowley, who's got some interesting things to point out about the legislature. And bear in mind, folks, we are not trying to start any street fights.
This is 103.5 FM, WCOM, Chapel Hill, Carrboro. Also heard online at WCOMFM.org. Thank you.
You're tuned to your community radio station, 103.5 FM, WCOMLP, Chapel Hill and Carrboro.
Look around you. One in four kids in the U.S. faces hunger. It's not always easy to see the signs, but in this land of plenty, there are kids who don't know where they'll get their next meal. Join Share Our Strength and take the pledge to end childhood hunger here in America by 2015. Learn how at nokidhungry.org. Their next meal could come from you.
You're listening to Claudio Speakeasy in Radio Theater. Let me remind you that you are listening to community radio for Carrboro and Chapel Hill, WCOM. Fellas, I'd like to ask you something before we get started. Jonathan, Claudio, Bob, all of you were telling me that you have visited or lived or are from Africa before we got started this morning. And I'd like to ask you and have you respond to our listeners, if you could pick two or three places to go or to visit in Africa, where would you advise a visitor to go? I've never been to Africa, and I want to go. And Bob, you were saying you went to Egypt and the pyramids, and Claudia, we've talked. And where would you suggest someone to visit, like myself, that has never been to Africa? Here we go, fellas.
I think it would be only fair to target Jonathan first on that one.
I think one of the greatest places in Africa is Zimbabwe. There's one thing that I like about the Zimbabwean people. If you ever visit them, even though they're going through some drought and there's no food, there's hunger, you always see them wearing a smile on their faces. And there's a great place there called Victoria Falls.
I've been there.
The Victoria Falls makes Niagara Falls look like a teardrop.
Yes, it does.
It is amazing. And it will be a place for you to go to visit.
The Valley of Mists.
Yes, sir.
Victoria Falls.
Victoria Falls. Sir. I would have to concur with that. I would say that there are also gorgeous places in East Africa, like Kenya. But at this point, I think it's safe to say that even if you want to explore cities like Pretoria, the capital, or Johannesburg, even those areas have become a lot more, lot safer and have been modernized a lot. So difficult to say, but I would say that my passion lies more for wherever you are, go out into the country.
And I'll agree with that myself. I mean, yeah, I've done the usual Egypt and the pyramids and the whole Nile and the whole thing. But I would look more to this Africa for myself, Zimbabwe, South Africa. I've done part of the country in South Africa, Joburg, Johannesburg, Cape Town, even been up to Pietermaritzburg. And I have been to Victoria Falls.
Now, those are wonderful places. Yeah, and I've been to Victoria Falls as a young boy.
Yeah. So, yeah, I like South Africa. I really do. The jungles in the, that are left in the equatorial parts, they're interesting. But I kind of like South Africa myself, personally.
I love the jungle, too. I wish there were more jungles. We shouldn't be depleting a resource that really, you know, strives and causes us to strive because it's there.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think jungles are an important thing to maintain.
Well, thank you very much,
sure.
Really.
Hope that answered it.
It did. It did.
And, Bob, at this point, I'd like to go to you. You have an interesting line of education here on what our legislature is up to.
Yeah. Before that, though, I'd like to preface this. I grew up essentially on the streets in and around New York City, so I've done a little street fighting.
Street fighting is not unfamiliar to you, no doubt.
No. I attended a conference last week here run by the North Carolina Center for Nonprofits, and there were some very interesting things shown to us and explained that are going through the legislature right now that are going to affect the arts and nonprofits in general, and all of us in particular, that we need to be aware of. I'm sorry. The one of the ones for nonprofits is, are you aware now, whether this goes through the legislature or not is still an open question. It's only been proposed.
In other words, if we rise up against it, it won't,
there
hopefully.
There is a possibility to do that. If you talk to your legislatures, definitely you need to do that. But one of the proposals will eliminate tax deductions on your North Carolina income tax for any donations to nonprofits of any sort. So you'll no longer be able to do to deduct any donations. And this could affect not just donations to WCOM, which we hope you will do, and the Apex Arts Council, but it is possible to reach out to all nonprofits of all sorts. It's still an open question whether they will extend it to donations to churches or not. But the proposal is there that would eliminate the tax deduction for donations to nonprofits.
If I may intercede for one moment, you bring up a good point about the churches. I have always felt that if churches want to get politically involved, as they seem frequently to be, then they should pay taxes.
Well, pay taxes or at least be on the same level as everyone else, nonprofit-wise.
Otherwise, keep it spiritual.
Other proposals would extend sales taxes to services. You could conceivably wind up paying sales tax on your doctor bills, on your landscaper, on consulting fees. You could wind up paying all sorts of sales tax. The thinking here, and the fellow who explained it to me, said, well, we used to sell a lot of lawnmowers in this state, for instance. And he says, we're not selling as many now. So we're losing that sales tax. And the reason we're not doing is obviously people are now hiring landscapers to come in and do their work. So we want to tax that service so that we can recoup some of the sales tax. And he had no concept of the fact that the current recession has driven everyone's income down to the point where we're not selling as many lawnmowers because we can't bloody well afford the things. And we're working with repaired mowers that we've been using for years. So there's a lot of stuff like that. There's also a proposal out there that would not necessarily affect nonprofits but could affect you personally, and that is to eliminate the state sales tax completely. Just wipe it out. Nobody pays it's, state income tax.
This is on the agenda.
Right. This is on under discussion. So, hey, that's a great idea. No more income tax. Yeah, but they'll replace it with a somewhere between 10 and 15% sales tax.
Yeah, right.
And that's particularly onerous because sales taxes hit the poor
always
hard. With a income tax, it's usually based on income and supposedly, whether it actually happens or not is another issue, supposedly the rich pay a greater level of tax because they make more money.
Rubbish.
Well, that's...
That's just me responding.
Yeah, and you're right, and we'll leave it at that. But with a sales tax, everybody pays.
Right.
So you're hitting the poor as much and even more, perhaps, than the rich because
the rich can afford it.
Yeah, exactly. So there's a lot of those kinds of things out there, and we really, as citizens, need to become aware of these things. If you support that, fine, support it. But if you don't, don't
stand up against it, or it will become the bed you sleep in.
Absolutely. I'm not advocating this either way, but I just want to make everybody aware there are a lot of things like this out there that are about to happen to us, and you need to contact your state legislator. And it's easier than you might think. Go to the legislative website. You'll find their name, their address, their phone number, their picture. You can write to them. You can call them. You can go to their office in the legislative office building in downtown Raleigh, which I have done many, many times with mine, and just have a chat. Let them know that you are not in favor, or maybe you are in favor, but they need to hear. They represent you. We always have this thing in the United States where we're very laissez-faire about our legislature and our laws. We elect people, and then we sit back and we let them do whatever they want and then just complain and don't ever do anything about it.
Otherwise, you're enabling that drunk family member that's eventually going to set the house on fire.
Yeah. Go and talk to them. Call them up. Write them a letter. Do something. But the point is, do something. So
absolutely,
that's something that we really need to look at, and this is my version.
It's a little shocking to hear this, but I'm not surprised.
This is my version of street fighting now.
Absolutely, and it's the version we all better take on because it's coming.
Yeah, so that's my political statement for today.
Well, thank you, Bob. I appreciate that. Why don't we go back to a little more music to mellow things out, and then I'm going to bring back the artist.
Okay, Claudio. Yeah, your time is important. Take us along. We're WCOM.
you rather make your own way or spend your life saying, what if? Life is calling. How far will you go? Peace Corps. To find out more, call 1-800-424-8580 or go to peacecorps.gov.
From the Arts Center in downtown Carrboro, it's Claudio Speakeasy in Radio Theater here on Community Radio WCOM. Now back to Claudio.
And it's going to be back to Jonathan here in just a minute after my question. I've got a question here since you are Zimbabwean. How does one say that? Zimbabwean?
Zimbabwean.
Zimbabwean.
Yes, sir.
How did you acquire the name Jonathan Daniel? Because that is rather British.
Oh, very interesting story.
I'll bet.
I actually gave myself that name. I changed my name because I wanted to change everything about my life.
May I ask what the name was originally?
Yes. My name was Penga Penga.
Penga Penga.
It was a nickname given to me. People in Zimbabwe, they don't name a child by... They don't just name a child because the name sounds good. They name a child by the event that occurred during the pregnancy.
Much like the American Indian.
Yes. So the story starts this way. Let me just give you a little story.
Please.
A true story. It was in 1965. Of course, it was then Rhodesia.
Yes. And I spent time in Rhodesia.
That's right. And so if you were black, you were on the law of the lowest. And so you worked for your master, who was the white man.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was about 150 workers in the field. One afternoon, it was very hot. This one woman decided that she couldn't work anymore. She went to the foreman and said to the foreman, I cannot work because I think I'm having contractions. And the foreman said, well, go lay under the tree. So she goes and lay under the tree, and just a few moments later, a Land Rover drove into the field and passed by this lady, and it was the farmer man, the white man.
Mm-hmm.
He went to his guy and asked him, why is, though he's a foreman, and said,
right.
Why is the woman laying under the tree shed? He goes, well, she can't work. She says she's having contractions. And he said, I don't care. She's making me lose money. Go get, tell her to go work. So the foreman goes and tells the lady, and says, lady, you need to get up and go work. And the lady said, I think I'm having closer contractions. I can't do this. And so he went and told the boss. And the boss got off his jeep and walked straight to the lady. And in his language, told the lady, get up and go work. And the lady tried to plead and said, I cannot work. And he said, that's nonsense. He got to her level where she was laying down and started beating her up and kicking her. And the lady realized, she knew very well about this man, that he was a notorious guy. So she got up and started running away from him. As you can imagine, a woman who is 9 months pregnant trying to get away.
Oh, Lord.
And him chasing her from behind and purposely tripped her. And of course, when you trip someone who's running, they're going to fall away.
Going to fall pretty hard.
And they're going to fall frontwards.
Absolutely.
The first thing that's going to hit the ground is the belly.
Yes.
And she fell down, and in horror, all those other 150 workers were just watching. They couldn't do anything. They couldn't come to her rescue because he was the law. He was above the law. Well,
that's truly how it was, yeah.
Yes. So then he got on her and started beating and punching her, and she was yelling and screaming. And then all of a sudden, the scream went away. And they couldn't hear anymore. They just hear the thuds of him punching and beating her. And then he got up and brushed himself and walked to his jeep and told his foreman, he says, tell everybody it's time to go home. Go bury her. She's dead. So they carried her body. And as they carried the body, the women took the body to the village. And the men went to start digging the grave because in Africa, of course, we didn't have the morgues.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to bury them.
Yes. There.
So while they were preparing this lady and the men were digging the grave, a little boy, little kids ran to the men and said, you are called home. So the men ran back home. They thought the men was back into the village. Excuse me. And as the ladies were washing the body for the last, for the preparation,
mm-hmm.
for viewing, 4 hours later, a miracle happened. The lady came to life. She started breathing.
Oh, my God.
When she started breathing, of course, she went straight into labor. When she went into labor, the baby was born, and there was no noise. And they picked up the baby, and this lady with her face mingled and beaten up, swollen, started crying. I want my baby to be alive. And there's nothing they could do. They lift up the baby upside down and beat the baby on the back. Mm-hmm. And there was no life. A minute went by that looks like an hour. And 5 minutes went by. And at the last ditch, someone just beat the baby in the back. And all of a sudden, a second miracle happened. The baby started breathing. When the baby was born, of course, mm-hmm. and of course he started living just like his mother, they well recuperated from all the beatings. And the mother named this child the nickname they called this horrible white man. And when the little boy was about 8 years old, he asked his mom, "Mom, wait a minute, something doesn't add up here. Why is it my name is the same as the name they gave that man on that farm who is horrible, who is well known for his torture and everything?"
Penga Penga.
Penga Penga. And the mother said, "Because when I was pregnant, this is what happened. And that boy is me." And so when I discovered that, became so angry and bitter towards anybody who was white.
I can understand that.
And so I walked in streets where I couldn't even look in anybody's who was white in their face. And I had so much bitterness, so much angry, so much anger that you could, it was so thick that you could actually scoop it up.
I can fully appreciate that. What does Penga Penga mean?
Penga Penga means the crazy one.
The crazy one.
Yes. So how did I came to where I am today?
And it's a rather unusual inheritance.
Yes. And how I in... Why I am the kind of a person I am in forgiving. What actually happened was, as you know, Rhodesia was, if you're black, you work for white men.
Yes.
In their home.
And you call them master.
Master.
Masa.
Masa. You clean up their house, you make their beds.
Whatever they wanted.
Whatever.
And when evening drew, they sent you back to the location.
Yes. And then what happened was, I was...
Brightness is a little dry in the studio, folks.
Yes.
And I did not provide my guests with water. Shame on me.
I was walking in the streets one day when I was 15, and I decided I was going to go into the street of the city to become a professional thief because my mom and dad couldn't afford to live on what they were making. And by the way, they had moved away from that farm because you never stay there too long.
Mm-hmm.
They moved on to another farm. And on my way there, I had a call. Hey, can you come up here? I looked over. It was a white man calling me. And I knew better not to disobey. I ran up there. But something happened to me with this white man. When I ran up to them, he gave me a handshake, which was unknown. And he said to me, "What are you doing?" I said, "Nothing." He says, "I want you to come with me." This white man took me in his home and took me, and actually, this man picked me from my trash, and he bathed me, gave me clothes on my back, and I sat on the table with him. And this white man was a missionary.
What a unique soul. I thought you were going to say something like that.
Yes. And so I came to realize just because one bad apple is bad in a basket, you don't throw them all out.
No.
Which means to me, I came to realize just because one white man was bad, it doesn't make all white people bad. And I've come to America and I've traveled around the world. When we hear of bad news, when it's a black man or Hispanic or white man, we all just generalize all of them. They're like that.
That does seem to be done. You're right.
And I came to realize that I need to do something that was better than what I was thinking, which was when I saw white people, it wasn't mean they were all bad. It was just one that was bad. So I don't have to rule them all out as bad or prejudiced people. Prejudice is in every color. Black
people
are prejudiced. I was prejudiced. But sometimes people think, prejudice was in white. People talk of slavery. They think slavery was only a white man problem. No, black people were also enslaving their own people.
So absolutely. That's how they got shipped to foreign lands.
Exactly. So what I say is people need to think before they make these comments.
Absolutely.
Jonathan D'Angelo, I'd like to ask you, did you have any formal education? Because you speak so eloquently, and what you say is always so profound. It is. And I've heard a lot of people in my life and radio. And Claudio, do you, and Bob, don't you agree with me?
Absolutely.
The way he speaks and what he is saying, it's always so profound.
I wasn't born speaking English at all, and of course, I was born at the wrong time, at the wrong place, some people call it, but I think it was at the right time, because at that time when Rhodesia was in place, my people were not allowed to go to school. You were only allowed to go to third grade for one purpose, so you'd be able to communicate, to answer yes, sir, no, sir.
You were deliberately kept ignorant, that's very
true. Ignorance, yes. But at age 15, when this missionary brought me, they sent me to school. I started in fifth grade when I was 15 years old to go to school. I never started in first grade.
Please tell us his name.
His name was Cecil.
Cecil.
And he's from Atlanta. And Cecil passed away about 4 years ago.
Wow.
So he's my man.
He was your tutor.
He was my tutor. He was my father. He was my provider. He was my everything. And he was a white man. And yes. I can call him my father.
And there was another point that you, I would say so, absolutely. And there's another point that you wanted to make about your own prejudices being cast off, mm-hmm. and that is that you have married.
Yes. And one of the things is I came to realize when you forgive, it gives you an amazing feeling. The weight is taken off your shoulder and you are free. You are in a free world and you start seeing things differently. You don't see color anymore. As I talk to you, my buddy, my friend, I met you for the first day. I don't look at you as...
Hours ago.
Exactly. Just because you say you were from Africa, you are my brother. I look at you as my brother. You are a white man. I'm a black man.
Absolutely.
The only difference is the shade of color.
Absolutely.
I call it the pigmentation problem. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
I married a white woman. I never thought I would. But what made me do that was not because I felt sorry for myself or felt sorry for anybody. No, because true love, I saw the heart of this woman. She represented my mother. She had the love of my mother. She had the height of my mother. And when I was a boy, I always wanted to marry someone who was my mother. And guess what?
I think that's in all of us sons.
Yes.
Somewhere.
And my wife, as though she's white, she is a pure image of my mother.
Amazing. And how is your mother? Where is your mother? Is she passed
on? No, my mother's still alive.
Fantastic. What a thing to go through.
Here's an extraordinary thing I want you to understand about my mother. I'm the firstborn. And she told me this story. She said to me, this is a secret between the two of us. Do you know I come from nine kids. There's nine children. I'm the first of the nine children. And she's never told this to any of my siblings. They don't know. And she said, it's between you and I. And I said, Mom, why? Even today, she said, we don't talk about it. And I said, why, Mom? She says, because if we tell the others, they don't know how to understand and to forgive, then in them, they'll grow with bitterness.
Yes.
So she doesn't want that. So my brothers don't even know the story.
Well, they may someday pick up this podcast.
One day they will.
On another note, now that you have met the person in Jonathan Daniel, I would like to introduce the artist. You have some extraordinary art. He does. I would refer to you as a sculptor. He does wire art. And we've got a Harley Davidson sitting in the studio here that he made completely out of wire. Get into your art because we only have about 7 minutes left.
All right. Actually, wire art is something that I picked up when I was little. We grew up very poor. We didn't have any toys to play with. So I picked up trash. And trash was what was available to me, mm-hmm. and I made it into a toy. And so what I create now, I create art that is amazing. You can actually go on my website.
Give us that website.
It's www.jdwireart.com. But you can also, the cool thing is you can actually go in the Google search or my name, Jonathan Daniel. I come up
It'll
there.
Come up, yeah.
And you can go and check my web.
Exactly the way it sounds, Jonathan Daniel.
Mm-hmm. Jonathan Daniel.
Not Daniels.
No.
Daniel.
Just Daniel. And so I did this making wire art when I was little until I got to be about 13 and I stopped. And then I never picked it up again. I only picked this up as by accident when I came to America when I was 27 years old in 1992, May of 1992, I came to America to study aircraft mechanics. I'm sitting in a classroom. A fellow student dropped a little model that was welded together by metals. And it was for my instructor, and he got so upset because my friend had dropped it. And he said, no one can make anything like it. This art is amazing. And other students have made attempts. They couldn't make anything.
And he'd had it in his possession for 20 years.
For 20 years, that's right. And so I just chuckled from behind. And he said, why are you laughing? And I said, because I think that's the lousy art I've ever seen. Because it reminded me of the art that I'd made when I was little. Mm-hmm. And so he challenged me. And when he challenged me, he said, you go make me one, and let's see if it will be on my display. And I went home, and I made one, and I made the helicopter that he flew. Not only did I make this helicopter, but I made it out of wire to where you can actually roll it, and the blades propeller. Turn, the propellers turn.
Fantastic.
And that's how I found my art. But there's another story to it. When I first came here to America for school, I was supported by a woman to go to school. When I came here, it was going to be $200 a semester. Once I was enrolled, we came to find out this was going to be $2,000 a semester. And this lady, there's no way she could afford it. She was a widow. She had just recently lost her husband. And so they decided to just keep me for that semester, and then I was going to be sent back to Zimbabwe. And I was in my last phase of finishing that first semester and go back to Zimbabwe when I made this helicopter for my professor. Well, to make the long story short, all my fellow students saw this model and said, could you make me one, please? We know you're going to leave to go back to Africa soon. I said, sure. I went back and I started making them what they requested. And when in my mind, I was going to make a couple of bucks out of this thing. And when I brought it to school, one of my fellow students said to me, you know, I'm a fellow student. I don't work. I don't have much money. Is $300 okay? And I was like, are you kidding me? He said, well, you know, I'm in school. I'm like, okay, for $300, okay, I'll do it for you. But in my mind, I was expecting $5.
Yes.
So he took it and hung it in his room. And of course, as you know, college students, they party a lot.
Yes.
And a lot of kids came through.
Oh, it got showed off, yeah.
When they saw it, it was my first publicity. They all wanted one, and so I started getting phone calls. Within a month, needless to say, I raised $5,000.
Nothing like word of mouth.
Making things out of wire, and that's how my art was reborn.
And at this point, you're going around not only as an exceptional artist, but you're also a bit of a storyteller, and you've certainly convinced us all in the studio of that this morning. But I think you work through the Raleigh Arts Council. Now, is there a way people can contact you for any of this?
Yes, they can just go through to my website that I gave already.
Go ahead and give it again.
JDWireArt.com.
JDWireArt.com. Mm-hmm.
Jonathan, I'd like to say that it's been a pleasure to meet you, and I feel you're so profound and so intelligent and so deep.
Thank
really.
You very much. Thank
and
you.
I think you need to write a book. I do. And it's just a pleasure to meet you.
Well, it's a pleasure meeting you, and I thank you for inviting me to be a host.
Well,
this is not the only time. You're part of the family now, and I think there's still too much to go into. I want to go into much more of your artistic and personal philosophy, but I think we're running out of time. We've got about 2 minutes left, and John Paul's already in the building for his show. So at this point, any closing remarks? We've got 2 minutes left.
I just want to say the one thing I said earlier. Living with angry and bitterness is the poison that you drink, hoping someone else will die. Please forgive and move on and excel.
Forgive does not mean you have to tolerate these individuals any further. You can choose to be apart, never to see them again. You do not have to forget. Forgive so that the burden is lifted from you.
From you.
This way others you touch will not be burdened by it. This is Claudio Speakeasy and Radio Theater. Thank you for tuning us in. Thank you, Rocco. Thank you, Bob. Thank you, Jonathan.
Thank you all, gentlemen. It's been a pleasure.
This is Claudio signing off. Until next time, cheers.